Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The Naked Englishman. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life behind the scenes of a YouTube creator. It's the 2nd of November today. It's about 6:15 in the morning and the house is quiet. Julia spent the night at her mum and dad's with the boys. I was here. I've got to wait in for a parcel today, so I couldn't go and join her. Somebody very kindly is sending me some herbs and some various other bits and pieces and some homegrown tobacco, which will be fascinating. The herbs are there to be smoked. You can put them in a pipe and smoke them, so I'm very much looking forward to that. It's early in the morning. I thought I'd record this. I've got the cat was out all last night. It's always a worry because you wonder if the cat is actually going to come back in the morning, that something has happened to it. But he wouldn't come in last night, so what do? You just go, well, I'll just have to leave him out. Call him. Anyway, so that was the situation then. Let's just go through our diarists and see what's occurring. This is Gilbert White, 1780, in Hampshire. We get a lot from him, don't we? And he says, I'm just trying to get my eyes to work at this sort of time in the morning. I always take advantage of the fact that if I'm on my own in the morning, because Julie hasn't got to get up, I don't have to make her a cup of tea for her because she's not here. I can just get up and, you know, be autonomous, as it were. I just take advantage of the fact that I can get up nice and early if I wake and am ready to get up. And I knew I had to get up and empty the bladder and open the door for the cat. I'd forgotten to put some food out of the fridge. The cat has some fresh meat preparations and they're frozen. And so I'd forgotten to thaw one out. So anyway, I got up and did all that. And also I wanted to see if the cat would come in, and he has now. Anyway, Gilbert White says, leaves fall very fast. My hedges show beautiful lights and shades. The yellow of the tall maples make a fine contrast against the green hazels. John Ruskin, in 1857, Denmark Hill in Surrey, says, grey, blackish, damp, wretched morning, miserable, foggy day. So people are, in history, of course, are looking at the weather and going, oh, it's not good, is it? It's not good. I've been waiting for a nice sunny day for over a week, over nearly 2 weeks, I think. We've had just such awful weather. I'm taking a break from the interviews from around about the 6th or 7th for a few weeks, so and possibly to the end of the year, I think I've said that before, because it pins me to one place and at a time, and usually in the afternoons. So I'm rather hoping that we get some better weather. I can get out and go for some walks, and I've missed all that. It's been an exciting 2 year period. Absolutely, discovering the various rabbit holes and things. But at the same time, I have missed my ordinary way of life. And it's focused my brain on various things that are happening, of course. But I've just been in the house a lot. I needed a break from the Bald Explorer. I'd done that for 6 years and was really getting nowhere. And that's the that is you know that's the problem. I felt like the audience were not really that interested. The viewing figures weren't really started to dwindle. I at the same time was running out of money to go further afield. It became very difficult to go further afield because I had Julia and she had her children and she couldn't bring them. And it just felt like if I sort of said, well, I'm going off for a month, Julia was in a very difficult position with her ex at the time, hadn't sorted out at that point her divorce, was quite vulnerable. Didn't have any money, and we were yes, it was so it was the right thing to do something that would keep me going, garner some views, earn a bit from YouTube for a change, but got me suspended 4 times, and of course lost a load of followers, but gained 100-fold more. But the 100-fold more are interested in something more specific. However, one cannot keep polishing a jug. You have to at some point say the jug is polished. And I'm not really a journalist, and I'm not really a news source. And the videos have been a self-inquiry. Why is the government treating us in this way? And now, you know, I've come away after 2 years of doing this with all the people I've interviewed and the subjects and the emails and the books that one's read, listened to, talk to, etc., all of this, you come out with a very good, broad idea of what's going on. Some of it may be a little far-fetched. Some of it may not be fetched far enough. I'm going to make this coffee. I was waiting for the water to filter through my jug. And so then you think, well, I'm on the next... We're on the next phase... Whatever that means, wherever that takes us. Just bear with me a second. I'm going to plug this in. So I've got another video this morning. Thing is, I won't be giving up the monologues, or, I mean, you know, the monologues have been, well, the videos of, I'm just trying to think how to best to describe it. I'll let the kettle do its thing. You know, the monologue video is effectively what replaced the Bald Explorer out and about video. It was a video every day, wasn't it, effectively? So the monologue became the out and about videos. Sometimes they were one take one, and sometimes they were more complex. And so I don't think I will give that up, in the same way that the Naked Englishman, I have been doing that for 18 years. It's so ingrained in me now that I can't give that up. It's whether I can, whether the monologues or whatever, or the new phase that I hope, which will be more about farming and growing in a farmstead or a homestead, whatever it is, whatever the future it can conjure up, will be rewarding and enjoyable and, of course, shareable for the audience. That's That is my hope and plan. So we will see. We will just have to see. You can't keep polishing the pot. Oh, I need a hanky. Here's one. Anyway, sorry about the very slow nature of this. If you're waking up, or you're having breakfast and you listen to this, I hope you know this is a non-aggressive, very gentle, hopefully relatively calm little thing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes I do get a bit ranty, don't I? On this, the book is going well. The book that I'm writing is going well. I will read some bits out of it, but I want to get to a first draft first. I want to at least get the thing finished in one form or another. What I tend to do, I haven't written a book now for a while, but with the Splidge books and the Escape from Snod Hill books, and was there any others? No, they were the main ones that I did like this. The Ghost Detective, of course. Forgot about those. With those, I tended to print them off, have them printed off at lulu.com as a book. Not for publication, just for my own personal use. And from there, I would edit them. I would, because to sit at the computer all the time is a pain in the bum. And I could take those on a walk with me and sit under a tree or whatever and take a red pen, and I could spend some time going through the text, making changes and writing in red, rewriting a line. I would make sure they were spaced, double spaced, so that I could write in the spaces if I had my changes. And it was a very easy way of doing it. And also it's quite nice to look back at the book and see the changes. I think if I remember rightly, it was usually the sort of I would write it, I would then read it back and make changes as I went on the computer. Then I would print it, and then I would make my, as it were, second edit, if you like. And I would type them up. And then again, I would print it. And then it would need proofreading. And also somebody to sort of say, yeah, I understand what's going on. Or what happened to so-and-so? Or did you explain such-and-such? You know, just to sort of make sure that it made some sort of sense. So that wasn't always possible. Anyway, one of the books that I've read to you fairly recently, I think, was a book called The Changing Village by F.G. Thomas, sent to me by Sean James Cameron. And this is one of these discussion books I was telling you about. That was very strange. The cat is at the window. Or maybe it was his tail. That was the most frightening, not frightening, but disturbing thing. I'm sitting here, the curtains are drawn, and I heard this bum, diddy bum, bum. I thought someone was knocking at the window. It was most weird. I didn't know if you heard it. Nobody there. But I think it must have been a cat's tail. Unless it was a ghost. I I was going to read another bit more from this book, but I can't remember what I read before, actually. Here we go, Chapter 3, Rural Exodus. Nearly two-thirds of the population of Britain live between towns of 50,000 or more inhabitants, while 8,500,000 people of the total estimate population of 45,598,000 live in Greater London. That's an interesting figure, isn't it? This is 1930. So let me just read that again, because I've nearly two-thirds of the population of Britain live in towns of 50,000 or more, right? 8 million, 8.5 million people of the total estimated population of 45.5 million live in Greater London. Oh, it's saying 8 million people live in London. 45 million, 45.5 million live in England. I thought he was saying that 45 million. Achoo! Excuse me. Lived in that spooked me a bit. That knock on the window, because it was like this, which was a very humanly knock. Anyway, sorry about that. If local government diversions are taken into a basis of calculation, 80% of the population is recorded as urban and 20% as rural. These facts present, in broad outline, the consequences of the industrial exploitation of this country. The position is not stable, however, and the tendency in recent years has been for newer industries to be located near the existing centres of large population, with the consequent growth in the population of towns, particularly in the Midlands and outer London. People have raced into these conurbations, haven't they? The exodus from the rural areas, contributing to this town growth, is apparent to the casual observer and farmers. It is said they are all hampered by the great difficulty of securing enough men to do their work. These are farmers. That was from the Times in 1938. because the war hadn't started. The article from which this sentence is taken proceeds to outline some of the measured necessities to encourage good men to continue and the better young men to start on farm work. The farmer must take a more considerate view of his workman and model of his own life on that of the tradesman. I'm not reading this terribly well, I'm really sorry. The farmer must take a more considerate view of his workman and model his own life more on that of the tradesman and less of the country gentleman. That's interesting you say that, because reading A.G. Street's novels and his own take on farming and his biography, as it were, in the 30s, it does appear that many of the farmers did look at themselves as if they were country gentlemen, some of the bigger farms, and they didn't actually do the work. They had the employees. They swanned off doing shooting and various things. They did the accounts and they made the decisions, it would appear. Although Julia and I met a farmer on our way, I can't remember where we're going now, west, and we stopped at a farm shop near Wilton, where A.G. Street used to live in the 30s, and farmed. And this chap was 80, he said he was about to retire. I may have mentioned this before. And I said to him, did you ever know A.G. Street? Because I'd heard him say, you know, I'm about to retire. And he said yes, and he said he was a bit of a cad. He didn't farm. in the same way that many of the other farms actually got on and did the work. So it was interesting. But he wasn't alone, I'm absolutely convinced. Anyway, it's important to discover that what are the motives attracting young people to the towns, for it is not only agricultural workers who leave. Any youth will gladly accept an opportunity to escape. In this, he is supported by practically the whole village of younger people, the mobile generation, to whom reference was made in an earlier chapter. The village teacher's attitude summarises the view of many parents. The height of ambition and the greatest credit to the school is achieved by the scholarship winner, for he is on the first rung of the educational ladder to a secondary school and the black-coated professions. Does he mean the legal professions? In the secondary school, the same objective dominates, and the brightest rural children are encouraged to proceed to the training college and the university for training courses as teachers. Once in these institutions, the objective becomes clearly defined, a teaching post in a major urban area, with London securing the first choice each year of prospective teachers. After London, the large industrial centres claim their share, and as these possibilities fade, the less successful areas turn to rural areas. Now, I think we all know that. I think that's self-evident now. That was written, as I say, in the late 30s and nearly 100 years ago, 90-odd years ago, or 80-something years ago, whatever it is. And we see, of course, that people have been encouraged to go to the town. And this has gone on, and this is the early part of hard to really get your head around this and accept it, that as far back as that there was a deliberate plan. But these things, it seems, has taken a long time to get people out of the rural countryside, for the country to be taken over by big industry, as big industry has taken over everything, corporate takeover of everything, that farming turned into a large industrialised almost corporation. We've seen that with the advent of the supermarkets. There is no one left in the villages. They are dormitory ghettos for the retired and the rich. And now we see that the young teachers who are being trained to teach awful things, such as giving children of 8 years old homework to masturbate. No word of a lie. I was sent yesterday by one of my viewers some information that is going to teachers, and it demonstrates what parents do not know is that children are being taught some very dangerous paedophilia information to make them susceptible to abuse. This is happening in the state schools, and people need to get their children out of schools and away from harm. If we are going to change anything, we have to get them out of schools. It's intolerable, and children are being damaged. And the next generation, such as they are, will be pretty much, they'll be damaged, but incapable of all sorts of things, incapable of being fully fledged, wonderful people. Cat is leaping off my desk. So I'm not quite sure how to put that into a video to, you know, as a stark warning, but it is rather frightening and rather horrible. Anyway, I think I shall leave it there because I'm just rambling a bit. Today's one is, again, another of these. These do seem to be a bit, I mean, I don't know whether people like this kind of stuff, whether people listen, whether they, I don't have a counter. On YouTube, you have a counter and you can see how many people at least started to watch. You can see how many people stopped mid, you know, where was the average midpoint that people stopped. This is just
an MP3, as you know, on a web page where the MP3 is either downloaded or it isn't. I have no idea. Don't have any statistics whatsoever if people listen or like or enjoy or ignore, and whether I waste my time. Partly, as I said this so many times in the past, I do this really as a mental exercise for myself first thing in the morning, for however long it is, 20 minutes, whatever, to practice being able to orate once you're up. And having done it for 18 years, it is a continual practice of training the mind, if you like, to conjure up something out of nothing. And so I don't know whether it's worthwhile or not. But I need to go and have a shave. I'm not fully dressed. I'm sitting in a big jumper and some sort of jogging bottoms, very relaxed, but with my cup of coffee in my armchair, surrounded by books, which every time I look at them, they say, read me, read me, read me. And I think, yes, I must. But I must go and have a shave. So thank you for listening, and have a good weekend. Thank you.